Session number 12709, Mr. Albert Davis, reel 4.
Mr. Albert Davis, Reel 4. What general and routine duties were you performing at this time, Mr. Davis?
Well, there wasn't very much duties at all for us. Being the younger element, most of the duties were done by the elderly territorial people. Which weren't expected to take part in the war anyway, being so old. Guard duties, I can't ever remember doing one. I can't ever remember seeing a guard on duty, because it was in such a secluded place that it didn't require one. And at night time, the gates were shut, and it was all shut off.
You mentioned these veteran soldiers. Were these going back to First World War, men who had served in the First World War?
No, not really, but they were two or so pretty old, like 30-odd, getting on 40, some of them, and they were getting a bit slow. And therefore, I thought the authorities would rather let them do the fatigues than take part in the strenuous exercise that we had. Because for the younger element, which was field craft and marches and schemes of all sorts, were all, every day, the more we get in, the better it was. That took up the biggest part of the day.
What happened to these older men? Did they disappear?
Well, I don't know. When we left for France, I think some of them were taken out of the regiment and sent back for home training to Durham or wherever they've come from. They're probably old territorials that had done quite a spell anyway.
Involved in your training, you mentioned talks and so forth. Were you getting talks about the enemy that you were likely to meet and the kind of things that you have to face?
Yes, and photographs and that. But our officers then were just as ignorant to the fact that they'd never met anyone. So we couldn't. We just got to go by what we were told. And the pictures we were shown, and the information that our other officers got.
Were you given any talks on regimental history to build up your esprit de corps?
Brief, but regimental history takes a lot of time to go through. But we were told the brief things, the main things, why the regiment, proud to be proud of the regiment and everything that, and by God, we were at the end.
What happened next, Mr. Davies?
Well, after spending a delightful Christmas there, first Christmas I'd ever had away from home, it came to the crunch that a move was on the agenda, and in early January, we were told we were going to move to march to Chipping Norton, which was just over 5 miles away, and meet the rest of the regiment there to be transported to France for duties there. Of course, this was all very hush-hush. We didn't tell the population, but they had an inclination. Somebody must have leaked it out that we were going. There was plenty of tears. But it was early morning. We were ready. Thick with snow and noise. It was still snowing when we left. And we had to march 5 miles, nearly all uphill, full kit, to Chipping Norton. And I know Lieutenant Allison, one of the officers, he fell out. And they had to pick him up later on with transport. And one or two more fell out. I'll never forget that march. But eventually we did get there. And met the rest of the battalion, lined up into different sections. And there we were inspected by the King, who had a brief walk around us, said a few words, and that was it. But I can quite well remember it. And I thought, oh, well, he didn't look much like a king. He's pale, you know, looked a bit ill to me. After that, we were all grouped together into different parties and made aboard a train at Chipping Norton. Now, this train, there's one thing, this train went through Hawk Norton Station, but they wouldn't let us board there. We had to march the 5 miles from Hawk Norton to Chipping Norton. Anyway, we got on the train and that was it, on our way to the docks.
Before we leave that, had you had any leave in this period of time that you were down in the Norton area?
No, I don't think we had.
Had you not been given
Some of them did, but I didn't myself. Personally, I was quite satisfied without going home on leave. Because I'd met up with a family that treated me like I was one of the sons. And we were all pals together. So I could have my food there and I didn't need to go home.
The journey to Southampton, I believe you went to, with the battalion, was it a long journey?
I think it was, it wasn't Southampton, it was, I think it was Liverpool Docks. It seemed a fairly long journey. I can't remember much of the journey or even landing there at the docks or even getting on the boats. But I know we did get on the boats and eventually ended up at Cherbourg in France. And I know then, because it was very, very cold and very icy and windy and snowy.
Was there any kind of reception from the French when you landed?
No, everything was all so hush-hush. We didn't expect any anyway. Most times we landed was in the dark. We set off in the dark and landed in the dark. I suppose it was worked that way. And very little reception. You know, you get French looking at your eyes. What's he here for? But the weather stuck out more than anything else. It was terrific. It's very, very cold. Every night we had to start the engines, although some of them were diesel. Start the engines every 2 hours to keep them, stop them freezing up. And I know it's a very long journey from Cherbourg to where we got to go.
Where did you go to first?
A place called Charancy. I can't even see it on the map sometimes. We spent a night or a couple of days there, and then from there to somewhere else. I just can't remember the names. But we eventually finished round Lille, or Amiens, around that district. And from then on, we were pushed from place to place, digging trenches or exercises. Firing range occasionally, because we hadn't had much firing range at all.
How did the French receive you?
We had very little to do with the French, really. Apart from at night time when you get the... If you happen to be in a village or close to a village where they had egg and chips. And that's about all we... You go in a cafe, but they were not welcoming, not just 50-50 sort of thing.
Did they show any concern or fear that the Germans may come?
Not right then, no. No. They didn't think they would. I think they thought that the Maginot Line and would stop them. You know, that he wouldn't get through. It was a shock to them when they did.
You were up in the Lille area, you say, digging trenches and ditches and so forth. How did you feel, how were your own personal feelings that this was preparing you for an action situation? Did you feel that you were being equipped to face an enemy?
Well, really, you didn't know, because you didn't know what you're up against. I mean, they tell you these things and that's all you can go by, what he got and what he hadn't got. But I know, like the tanks, for instance, they said they'd knock them out easy. Well, I'm wrong about them. And planes. Wasn't too many planes, but there was masses of them. And they got to the lower skies. That was a different proposition than ours. We got no damn planes. All I saw was two Hurricanes, and at night I think four Wellingtons take off. I never saw them come back. Any of them. And I never saw the Hurricanes again.
Do you recall the time of the year that you were up at Lille, in the Lille area?
Yeah, well, it was, I know it was warm. May, June, around June. No. Must have been May. Around the Albert Canal and there. But we were never in one place for very long until Arras decided. Our division decided that they would attack the Gerries. And we did attack the Gerries.
You'd been up to Belgium before that? You'd marched into Belgium?
Well, we'd been up to Belgium and the borders were Holland and moved from place to place. And wherever there was a sign of breakthrough, to plug the gap, we were there. And then eventually we finished down at Arras and Amiens.
What signs of war were you receiving up in Belgium? Were there any indications that things were not going right?
Well, you could say things weren't going right because everything was going from the front to the rear. Where you're going one way and the Belgians are going the other and even our own troops going the other way. Something got to be wrong somewhere. Everything was all so mixed up. You hadn't got clear orders what was happening. You went until you met the Gerry, and you either fought it out or cleared out. You know, when you... It's like 52-1 against, or having a bow and arrow against a rifle or machine gun. You felt so helpless. You hadn't got enough strength to retaliate. As long as you can retaliate a bit, you feel all right. But when you can't retaliate and the dive bombers, you see, you can't retaliate with them. You've got to lie there and take it. It was pretty disheartening.
coming back from Belgium, you had one or two rather long marches. Was there a lot of refugees that made marching difficult?
Yes. Transport couldn't get through for refugees. I've never seen so many abbots and monks, and I'm sure they weren't abbots and monks, they were jerrys, I think, dressed up. And they looked too young to be abbots, and there were all sorts. Personally, I never trusted any of them. I always thought about Humphrey Bogart. He said, never trust a sucker and always keep an eye on a friend.
What were your impressions of the refugees that you did see?
Well, I thought they were, you know, when they see the transport, a lot of them wouldn't get out off the side of the road and let the transport through. They keep on pushing, and the transport had to literally push them out of the way. And kiddies and all, lots of kiddies. And I think that was their get out, bringing children with them, because you're less likely to ask questions with them with kiddies than you are with the grown ups themselves. But I didn't trust any of them.
Was there any signs that they were angry with you, British troops?
Oh no, they. Most of them got their heads down on the floor and sort of heading for so-and-so and they were getting there.
Did you see any...
We didn't have time to converse with them.
Did you see any indications of German planes attacking the routes?
Oh yeah, yeah. They were trying to attack the convoys. But nevertheless, I mean, lots of civilians were killed, strapped. They killed as more civilians, I think, than they did of the soldiers.
Did you see any of these killed?
Not only from quite a distance. You know, probably down a mile-long stretch of road. You could see that the planes, as we were going away from it, you could see the planes dive bombing and strapping. You just see everybody scattering. We knew there were a lot of them got killed.
Did that have any effect upon you at all, watching this and seeing this?
Yeah, it just made you more angry, more determined. Well, saying, well, you know, you get your blood boiling. Give me something because I can throw at him. Just wanted to get at him, but you've never got that chance to use your thrust. You couldn't get that close because of the. It was more or less not like 1480 war face to face. It was at longer range.
Do you recall your involvement in the action at Vimy on the 21st of May, Mr. Davies?
Yes, when we were following up with the anti-tank gunners, then it was on Hotchkiss. And as soon as it was halted, we were into action, ready for any counter-attack that might come across. And then again, we moved from place to place, wherever we were thought we were needed most. We were stayed there, even after the forward companies had withdrawn. They withdrew through us. We stayed there until everything was cleared. And I can't remember anything, any tanks of it, any German tanks coming our way until we got the order to withdraw altogether. But I do remember that we were late, we were the last gun to come out. And I do remember there was two French tanks alongside the road and there was a lot of German prisoners. I hadn't personally taken any prisoners, but I know there was a lot of prisoners taken. And I had information how true it was, I don't know, that the French had shot all these German prisoners. But that was blamed onto the English, I think. Said they'd shot them. But that was untrue. We hadn't got time. We withdrew then.
You said prisoners
were the last thing we wanted.
You say that the information had... How did that come to you, that information?
Well, different ones that came, but all I can remember myself was seeing these... I know definite. I saw two tanks, two French tanks. I can see them now with the... standing up in his turret, and all these German prisoners lined along one side of the road. Later on, when we got away a couple of miles, we heard the machine guns firing, and how true it was, well, some said, oh well, the French have shot all them German prisoners. Different ones through the grapevine said they'd shot them. How true it was, I don't know. I can't swear. I didn't see it, actually. But I did see the tanks and I saw the prisoners.
The action itself, do you recall the scene that was going on, presumably in front of you, shell bursts and
oh, yes, there's shells in front of us, our own barrage and that going in front of us. And German shells coming back to counter fire in our barrage, like.
Did you have any feeling that you yourself may be hit?
Never thought about it. Well, from the start, you always think, expected to be hit. But you were so involved in what you were doing, you hadn't got time to think whether it would hit me or not. It was just... another matter. You know, if you get killed, well, you get killed. Nobody wanted to get killed. But somebody had got to do it. And the lads were all in the same frame of mind, I think. You know, you've got to work as a team and help each other. If one slacked, he got a real telling off, you know, no slacking of any of them. You've got to work as a team all the time. Do as what he was expected of you until you had orders to do otherwise. And that's what we did. We just obeyed orders right from the start to the finish.
Was there any German air activity against you?
Oh, yeah, lots of it. In fact, the Germans dropped some leaflets. Early morning, and these leaflets coming, we were picking up and saying something. I kept one for years and years. I don't know what happened to it. Something about referring to cricket or the game is up. You are now surrounded. Your only chance of escape is by surrendering and giving yourself up as prisoner. So. We just poo-pooed the idea, saying, oh, he's had that. So we just kept going as thinking it was really true. Now, we could have been captured, the lot of us. But we made our escape, all right. We broke through.
Did you have any problems in the Addis attack with the Stuka dive bomber?
Yes, but... on my particular place, we were just off the attack. They were concentrating more on the crossroads and villages. Whereas we were just outside the village in the countryside. And we escaped a lot of it by that. They just missing the Stuka attacks all the time.
What was the general feeling of the men under fire from a Stuka dive bomber?
Oh, well, I can't tell you what language went on and what they'd do if they caught hold of, you know. because you've got no protection whatsoever, and you couldn't retaliate apart from fire a rifle. But well, there was a small chance of getting a Stuka because they had come very low. If a lot of them got together and fired lots of rifles together, then there's a good chance. But you don't get that. You can't stand up there in a group and fire a rifle like that. As soon as you start dive bombing, you're on the deck, as low as you can get.
Was there a lot of men lost at Arras?
There's quite a few, but I can't remember exactly how many. I wasn't interested. I knew in my own heart that some of us were going to die and some were taken prisoner. But I don't know. I left that type of thing to the officials.
What happened to yourself then, as you were withdrawn? What happened to you next?
Well, as I say, we came back, told to retire from where we were, came back and joined the battalion again, and they just followed on with the battalion and under orders as to what we should do until place to place again, till we got back to La Panne Sands.
Part of the battalion had broken off and gone in another direction. Do you know how that came about?
See, another action along a built-up road. There was our carrier, a Bren gun. By this time, we'd got a Bren gun carrier for the, but we hadn't got a gun. We'd lost the gun. And by the way, we'd lost the gun not because there was anything wrong with it, but because other units had lost theirs, and it was transferred to another, say the 9th, could be any battalion. They'd only got one gun where we got four, so they took two of our guns to make up theirs. This was often that. I remember very well seeing this tank in the wood, at the edge of the wood, and he started shelling this carrier was broke down right on the road. He started shelling us. There was two lads in the ditch one side. I dived down by the carrier tracks because I thought, well, the carrier's, if it hits it direct, there's an even chance of getting away with it. I was nearest the carrier track, a lad next to me, and a lad next to him, and one in the, right in the ditch, all on a slope. And yet, the shell hit the opposite carrier track, which I was nearest to. I can't understand it, how it happened now, because you know the belly of a carrier, it's flat. It hit that track. It must have hit the top of the belly of the carrier and then diverted down. Well, it went over the top of me, only knocking a bandolier of ammunition off my shoulder, over the top of me, wounding the next bloke, killed the next bloke, and wounded the next bloke. So how lucky can you get?
And this was in the retreat to
Dunkirk? Yes, as we were going back, you see.
Were there any other incidents which are clear in your mind of the retreat?
Well, not really. Because after that it was all so confusing that you didn't know who was who. I mean, even we're in the Durhams, but we got some of other regiments, mixed up regiments from the Devons, or KSLI. It was all different units. There were, I've lost our unit, where can I find it? You know. We're all sort of lost sheep.